So hi, everyone, and welcome. For those of you who don't know, I'm Cherie Russell, and I'm an emotional resilience trainer and a psychotherapist. I specialise in helping clients overcome trauma, either caused by accident, injury and illness, or just life crisis, and then going on to improve their performance if they come from a sports background, or just improve their lives and make the changes that they want. So I'm going to talk today about anxiety, the thinking disease. And I'll go over several topics, for example, what it is, why we do it. I'll talk about worrying, fear and uncertainty. And then I'm going to give you a technique you can use to calm your jitters, to calm those feelings of anxiety and worry. And then I'll turn on the questions and answers open to all. So in the chat box, please just click it below. It's a little speech bubble and you can put your questions and answers in there. There's also the 478 breathing handout, which you can download, introduced in last week's session about stress. And I'll be referring to it later on today as well. So this is recorded, as I say, so you can listen if you want or come back and listen to the recording later. So anxiety, the thinking disease. One of the first things we notice when we take up a mindfulness or meditation practice is actually how remarkably busy our lives are. Hardly a moment goes by without us thinking, and many of our thoughts are disturbing, but this isn't by accident. Because if we imagine our ancestors in the African savannah several million years ago, they actually had little chance of survival relying on the things that nature gave them, like their fingernails, teeth, hearing, sight and smell. And in most cases, they were much less well-equipped than the competition. And in some cases, downright pathetic. Imagine confronting a lion with your bare hands. So we had to make the best of the ability to think. And it's no accident. The first thing most of us discover when we take up meditation is that our minds are thinking machines. They just won't stop. But evolutionary psychologists tell us that we didn't evolve to just think any thoughts. Ancient man, who repeatedly thought about bad stuff, remembered what they saw a lion do, or what happened when someone backed over a cliff, and they were likelier to survive. If they forgot the good stuff, for example, the location of a luscious piece of fruit, they lived another day. But they didn't necessarily survive. So we evolved minds that are like Velcro for bad thoughts and Teflon sometimes for good ones. And don't forget, our ancestors are the ones that survived, or the ones that survived long enough to produce children. So this history led us to develop what we call the thinking disease, where we're constantly analysing the past to see what was pleasant and what was painful, and trying to maximise our chances of feeling good for the future. But the stories we tell ourselves, the stories that pass through our minds all day long, can contribute greatly to our suffering. So we can blame it on our evolutionary past to thank for this. So given the wide range of anxiety disorders that actually emerge from the stories that we tell ourselves, how can we better understand this? So I'm going to look now at the components of anxiety, because most researchers understand that anxiety has three fundamental components. There's a physiological component that involves the physical emergency response. Then there's the behavioural component, which makes us avoid activities or situations that we associate with danger or discomfort. And then there's the cognitive component, which involves, well, how we perceive our future to be and anticipated fear or things that go wrong, and constantly appraising risk. And actually, that last item, risk appraisal, is particularly interesting, because it turns out that on the whole, people with anxiety disorders actually have better risk appraisal skills than without. And that makes perfect sense, given that it's part of our survival. So the physical emergency response is designed to save our lives. And as soon as our minds interpret a situation as dangerous, a predictable cascade of biological events unfolds. The sympathetic nervous system is activated. It raises our heart rate, body temperature, blood pressure, and respiration rate, while energizing other systems to get maximum use of our limbs to either fight or flight. And we all know what it's like to feel when our bodies get stimulated in that way. And one of the things that we notice when we do have a mindfulness or a meditation practice is how pervasive and frightening our thoughts of the future really are, and how frequently our physical emergency response, that sympathetic nervous response, is activated. And in our modern lives, even subtle, small fears cause that activation. So the second component, this behavioural component, most of us find that arousal of anxiety is extremely unpleasant. And in trying to avoid or eliminate these feelings, we easily fall into patterns of avoidance. For example, consider phobias. And here's a recipe of how individuals can develop agoraphobia in a few steps. So imagine that you enter a supermarket, and while walking down the cereal aisle, you spy the Cocoa Puffs out of the corner of your eye. And perhaps you might have had a past accident or incident that happened at breakfast time as a child. And that can trigger feelings of anxious arousal. And if you're not comfortable with anxious feelings, you might become concerned that this is a cardiac problem, or perhaps you're embarrassed about looking nervous and flushed. And that thought alone is sufficient to bring on more anxiety, which prompts additional fearful thoughts, and soon you really feel uncomfortable and you leave the supermarket. And of course, once outside, that anxiety abates. Reduction in anxiety, the negative reinforcement, the good feeling we get when bad feeling stops, can begin to set a behaviour pattern in motion. So what do you imagine is going to happen the next time you enter that supermarket? You might think, I hope I don't get that feeling again. And that can lead to the same consequence, further reinforcing the tendency to leave. And after a few cycles, you may begin to avoid supermarkets entirely. And then the bank, the post office, and the outside world. And that's how a phobia gets set. And now there's a wonderful quote from Mark Twain about this. He said, near the end of his life, he reflected, I'm an old man now. I've lived a long and difficult life filled with so many misfortunes, most of which never happened. The mind is constantly toppling forwards in this way. We notice through mindfulness practice that all anxiety is about anticipation. We're actually never anxious about the past. The recipe for anxiety is a negative prediction of the future. So if you think about something that makes you anxious, is it something that's already occurred, or is it something in the future? Sometimes when we worry about a past event, on closer analysis, we realise that we're actually concerned about a future consequence or repeat of that old event. And even when people who have interviewed the emergency medical team, you know, first aid, trauma, ambulance services, they learn that even people that are extricated from terrible car crashes worry about the future. Questions like, will I be able to walk? Will my loved one survive? Will I be okay? Even when that terrible pain at that moment is in the mind, our minds are on the future. And you think about it, it's actually remarkable the degree to which our mind does this, although it makes total sense in terms of our evolutionary history. And then there's our friend worry. Modern stressors, like money, COVID, other people's impression of us, time and deadlines, the unknown. Each of our frightening thoughts comes with that other component of anxiety, that activation of the physical emergency response. And the fear of the unknown is perhaps the fundamental fear that underlies all of our very human anxieties and worries, especially in the heart of this pandemic response. We're all scrambling to find ways to cope. In many life situations, we find ourselves are characteristic or characterised by not knowing or having to wait to find out. For example, the results of an important exam, waiting for a text response, or spending agonising days for the results of a medical diagnosis. These common situations require waiting in the face of uncertainty. And people usually find the fear of the unknown a very emotionally uncomfortable place to be. And to reduce the emotional discomfort of this fear of the unknown, people tend to behave in ways that they hope will mitigate the negative feelings, will turn down those uncomfortable feelings. Maybe you've checked emails every few minutes waiting for a result, or texted your new romantic interest too soon, or spent hours Googling for medical advice on your yet-to-be-diagnosed disease. We can classify the predictable ways people respond as worrying, seeking reassurance, searching for information, and becoming hyper-vigilant. In the first quarter of this year, we saw people deploy various responses to cope with COVID-19, including panic buying loo rolls, and obsessively scrolling through news feeds. And many of the ways we find to cope don't actually relieve that emotional discomfort of not knowing, but actually send us down a very unhelpful and negative emotional spiral. So what happens when worry becomes a habit? Human brains act as very good prediction machines. Our thoughts, feelings, and behaviours are based on our brain's moment by moment best guess about what's going to happen next. And when day-to-day life becomes unpredictable, our brain actually creates stories to fill the information gap. But what if some stories we tell ourselves actually make us feel worse, not better? Worrying involves repeating a story or imagining a possible scenario over and over again. And from your brain's perspective, worrying is a type of mental rehearsal in preparation for the real event. Our brains don't actually know what is real or is imagined. And so the more you repeat a thought, the more likely your brain is to treat that thought as a habit, as real, that needs to be stored permanently and rolled out habitually. When we worry, it becomes easier and easier for our imagination to actually roll out or predict the worst case scenario. But like sitting in a rocking chair, worrying gives you something to do, but actually gets you nowhere. Especially with the news at the moment of instances of COVID compounding more and more by the day. Seeking out data to fill the information gap may leave us frazzled, nervous, or even traumatized. Because when the brain's networks responsible for threat assessments are repeatedly activated, they trigger that physical emergency response over and over again. And a hyperactive stress response system leaves us in a heightened state of vigilance. From our brain's perspective, this is useful because if you're on high alert, you can easily detect danger. But at the same time, it can leave us feeling emotionally wrung out, jumpy, and hard to sleep. Hypervigilance also has a knock-on effect of leaving us unable to discern danger from safe situations. So what's your tolerance to uncertainty? Because it's important to understand that we all vary in our tolerance to uncertainty. And different people deploy a range of coping mechanisms. Some people are okay with not knowing what the future holds. And some people can't cope with even the smallest degree of doubt. But uncertainty goes hand in hand with anxiety, and those already suffering from anxiety and heightened vigilance are more likely to have a fear of the unknown. Incidentally, people who are exceptionally tolerant of uncertainty often have good emotional control. They're much more easily able to compartmentalize their thoughts and choose what they pay attention to and what to ignore. And they're usually really skilled at emotional regulation, that emotional agility, and keeping their responses in check. But none of us can see into the future. So what do those of us that are less tolerant to uncertainty do to survive this period and become much more mentally strong and emotionally agile? The good news here that actually it's rather like a muscle. Uncertainty and down-regulating this anxiety can be strengthened. So I'm going to teach you a little intervention, something to do when you're feeling anxious and worried, or whether the other people around you having a knock-on effect and making you feel anxious and worried. So first of all, to start, just take a little step back. And I've just dropped the 4-7-8 breathing handout in the chat box for you to download and refresh your memory. So step one is to take time out, do a little bit of breathing to bring yourself to the present moment. So when you're feeling anxious or worried, stop, breathe, and ask yourself, what are you feeling right now? Sometimes our feelings are hard to define, so it's important to define for yourself exactly what you're feeling. Step two, now don't be afraid of that feeling. Feel that worry. Just allow yourself to be anxious or worried or nervous. Just accept that you're feeling that feeling at this moment. Don't try and squelch it or deny it, because otherwise you'll only make it worse. Just focus on what's in front of you, what you're actually feeling. And take a few deep breaths and let those anxious feelings pass through you. Just pass through you. And you can continue to do your 4-7-8 breaths at this time. And as those feelings pass through you, ask those feelings, what is the message that you have for me? Literally, go into those feelings and ask what the message is. listen to the answer. It'll generally come immediately. And it might be something like trying to be perfect. If you're anxious, you're being overly perfectionist to the goals you've set yourself. You see all the ways that you won't meet them, and you can maybe visualize thoughts of failure. So look at the hard evidence from past experiences. Most of the time, people will see the things when it went wrong. They won't see the times when it went right. So stop trying to be perfect. Tell yourself it's extremely unlikely that anything will ever go as badly as I think. And there's no such thing as failure, only feedback. And we're all doing the best that we can. Maybe the message might be about being so nice. Stop being so nice. Is there a problem you're avoiding? Because most anxious prone people try to be as hard as they can to be agreeable. And they'll sweep their feelings under the rug rather than stand up for themselves. And then just control what you can. Recognize that the external world is unpredictable. What is it that you can control? Simple things. Maybe that organizing folders on your computer or just making your bed in the morning. Is it something about your daily schedule? Do you need to fall back on systems and processes? In a crisis, pilots are taught not to rise to the challenge, but to fall back on systems and processes. And a daily schedule provides you with a system to follow. Because when we're stressed or uncertain, our emotions degrade the quality of our decisions. And we can become distracted, indecisive, or make poor judgments. Maybe you need to move the goalpost closer. Maybe it might be time to shift your focus from the big picture to the details and begin taking action. Maybe you need to reward yourself regularly with breaks or bribes or treats. Maybe you just need to move your body. When you exercise, you're taking action. You're getting out of your mind into your body. And by moving your body, you're reminding your brain that you retain agency. It's within your control. Your brain evolved to move your body through the world. So moving your body reminds your brain that you're not helpless. You can still act independently. And down-regulates that physical emergency response. Maybe look to supporting others, because we're all in this together. So if you're feeling lonely, resist the urge to look inwards for the answers. Take action by supporting someone else. Feeling alone stems from the brain spending too much time and energy on self-contemplation. It won't solve the problem. And can easily make it worse. Luckily for us, feeling stressed triggers the release of oxytocin, the so-called love or social neurochemical. And when that is released, when we're stressed, it actually encourages us to reach out to others. And we might not be able to do that physically, but at least we can do it online. And then after you've received your personal message, embrace your anxiety and worry. Actually thank it for the message. It's a data source. You're not your thoughts and feelings. You are the awareness behind your thoughts and feelings. And once you get the message, you'll realize that your worry was there to give you that message all along. And now worry can be your friend or messenger. And if you worry a lot, you might get repeated messages. It might be the same thing. Just take them to heart. And then do something really corny. Just hug yourself. And wait till you feel what this feels like after doing this strategy. It's always a kind of shocking thing. And the last thing is take a deep breath. Let it go. Release that worry and anxiety. Let that just flow out of you and send it somewhere. The enlightenment you receive from your worry might be stunning. It's simple, yet stunning. So here are a few examples of messages that came from my own worry and anxiety. This too will pass. You'll always find a way. Let it go. One step at a time. It'll work out for you. You always know what to do when the time comes. And it'll feel right. Relax and simply enjoy your life. It's all just playtime. All of it. And smile. So there we go. A little technique. I'll have to jot that down, I think, in notes somewhere and give it to Sarah so that you can have that as a little intervention, if you like, a little technique to help. So I'm going to finish this now. But are there any questions or anything that anybody wants to ask while I'm still online?
From me, Sheree, yeah, I'm good, thank you.
You're very welcome. Okay. If anyone would like to have a chat in confidence, please don't hesitate to give me a call. I'm always delighted to help out, and we're all going through a lot at the moment. So yeah, please call me. Okay. Thank you very much. And I'll see you next week. Bye for now.
Yes, thank you. Bye. Thank you.